It has come to our attention that a mysterious force is loose somewhere in outer space.
Welcome to Talk Tank.
You've reached the Talk Tank, the official LSE Entrepreneurs podcast, where we delve into the minds of those who think, live, and breathe outside the box. My name is Alki, and I will be your host for today. Today's episode is part of our Women of LSE mini-series, which is brought to you in collaboration with the LSE Women in Business Society. This series is dedicated to the insights of women alumni who are making waves in their respective fields. Our guest for today is the incredible Nasia Matza, journalist slash model slash social media sensation. She's written for the FT, The Times, Wired, Vanity Fair, Vogue, and many other high-profile publications, and she's modeled for breathtaking brands like Christian Louboutin, Balenciaga, Prada, and Burberry. Being an LSE alumna, she's also one of our own, and we're excited to discover her very unique but also very impressive world. Welcome to the Talk Tank, Nasia. We're so excited to have you on.
I'm so excited to be here. What a lovely introduction. Thank you so, so much.
So we've given you our introduction, but we'd like to hear an elevator pitch in your own words. Who is Nasia?
Oh, God, it's pretty much what you said, but without saying that I'm incredible, but thank you. My name is Nasia Matza. I'm a London-based writer with published work in Financial Times, Vogue and Wired, among others. And I'm a model as well. And my main focus of research when it comes to writing is culture and tech.
Brilliant. It sounds like there are quite a few stories to unwrap. But before we go any further into your career as a model slash journalist, in our research, we found something quite interesting that I'd love to ask you about.
Tell me. What did you find?
Apparently, you applied to Goldman Sachs at some point, which is
God, how did you find that?
We have a very good research team. And so Goldman Sachs is like so typical for LSE students. But
I know.
You have quite a different path, I'm curious, what motivated you to fly there?
I have this mentality of like, okay, let's just do it. Like, I don't know, I have sort of like, you know, random ideas. And I was like, okay, just go for it and see what happens. And it was fun because at the time, I was studying in LSE, but my background was working for Vice, which at the moment, it was sort of like the publication which had its golden era. It was sort of like all young people, like really politically active. It was really fun to work there. And suddenly from Vice going to Goldman Sachs, it was like quite a big leap. I just applied, really. I went to the seminars that they were doing. I got the interview. I didn't go any further, but I was happy to just be in the offices. And it was just an experience. To be fair, now I'm glad that I didn't get the job. I'm saying thank God I didn't get the job because, you know, if I was going down that route, I would have stayed there. Obviously, it's an amazing company. Obviously, it's like top of the top. But in the same time, I feel that I've taken a different path, which has given me things which are more satisfying to my creative sort of like thirst.
Yeah, I feel like you've done pretty well without Goldman Sachs, but I love that story. I love that you were so open-minded to just be like, yeah, why not? I'll try it. Because nowadays, I think people think a lot about how their actions are perceived and what is it going to mean if I apply to that place or go there or do that. And yeah, I love that you don't let these things kind of define your actions.
No, you just have to go for it in life, no? Because, you know, like it's a cliche, but life is short. And, you know, we've seen the, you know, with the pandemic and everything, but you don't have that much time. So you might as well do it now rather than later and, you know, see what happens. And it's fine. Like, you know, every failure, you just learn more things about yourself or, you know, you just figure it out or you meet people. Worst case scenario is just an experience and it's fine. So, yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. But so since banking wasn't meant to be for you, tell us a bit about writing. How did you first start?
Yes. So after LSE, I was in the process of sort of like applying for jobs. And yeah, sometimes this gets a bit disheartening, but essentially I saw it as a 9-to-5 of applying jobs. So I was doing sort of like 5 applications at least per day. I wanted to be a journalist, but in the same time, I was aware that I'm not native. So sort of like it would be hard to actually get a job as a writer.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, okay, get into the sector that you want, which is media, get into a media platform, and then you figure it out, or you see what works and what doesn't. I got a job at Wired magazine, which is the tech magazine. I was in the business side of the magazine. It was really helpful. It was, so I was doing sales, but in the same time, I was sort of like in the environment where like all the journalists were. It was really exciting because I was learning so many ideas. It's really good to be next to brilliant minds as well, because, you know, you just feel that, you know, you can take something from them. And then I decided, I was like, okay, so I feel confident enough in my English. I feel confident enough in my ideas. I see what works and what doesn't. And then I wanted to make that switch. So essentially, I started freelancing.
Since you briefly mentioned your native background, this is mm-hmm. something that I was interested in, because I personally, so first of all, I'm also Greek, mm-hmm. but I've also... When I first started the podcast and was thinking about hosting, I was really scared to do it because, you know, everyone who I would see on TV, on BBC, they would all have this like perfect British accent. And I thought yes. I could never be a journalist or a podcaster.
And it's fine. And it's fine. It's absolutely fine. I had the same sort of like insecurities as well, of like, I'm never going to sound English. And it's fine. It's absolutely fine now. Sort of like find... I guess sort of like, you know, what are your sort of like weaknesses are. Let's say, okay, which is not really a weakness that we're not native, but let's say that, okay, sort of like we don't have the perfect sort of like British accent. But on the other hand, what you have is ideas. You have access to a network which someone else doesn't have. And actually what sort of like inspired me the most, I was talking with the editor of Wired in the beginning when I wanted to make that switch, that career switch into writing. And I said, I'm not native. I'm never going to be native. I'm always going to make those tiny small mistakes that sort of like you have to be a native in order to not make them. But I have great ideas and I have a great network and I'm able to spot trends and sort of like market trends before they actually happen. And he said, as an editor, I don't care about your English because it's something that I could fix. What I could care about is your ideas, and what I want to hear is something that I haven't heard before. And this is really just, you know, give me that push of like, okay, let's just do it. And essentially, it's know your strengths and weaknesses and just focus on your strengths.
He or she sounds like a really great leader. And I love that response that they yes. gave you. Mm-hmm. Do you consider yourself a confident person? You seem very confident on social media, but I'm curious because I imagine, you know, doing that, just going into the office of your boss and saying, I want to switch now. That does take a lot of confidence. So tell me a bit about that.
I think I lean on the confidence side. I think mainly it's working hard that gave me that confidence. Also, I think I want to be humble in a sense, like I don't want to talk about things that I don't know, and I'm not sort of like stressed or embarrassed to say, look, I don't have the answer, or I don't know, or I need to do more research and I come back to you on this. So just being really honest with what I know and with what I don't know, and just working really hard, essentially, you know, if you get better at something, then you have the confidence to have a view and have a point. And actually, if you have experienced something as well, then you have the confidence to actually communicate it in a manner which is not foul, essentially.
I think that's a good message for people to take away. Be confident mm-hmm. in your strengths, but also be humble enough to recognize
exactly.
That what you have to do to get where you want to be.
Exactly. And I think another thing is because we are migrants as well, I don't have the luxury of time to doubt myself in a sense of I'm born and bred in Athens. I'm sort of like I come from a middle class background. I had a pretty like everyone has problems. Yeah. But sort of like I'm aware of how privileged my life was. So sort of like I left that sort of like easy life. I left sort of like family, friends, and sort of like almost a future that I could see how would sort of like end up to just try something new. So I really don't have the luxury of doubting myself. You just go for it and hope for the best. And if not, you just try again. And if not, you try again. And if you decide that you don't like it, you just change and figure it out as you go along. So it's quite interesting because I was talking with a friend who was also a migrant, and she gave me an amazing advice. She said to me, I was insecure about something work-wise. We had like a discussion, as sort of like girls have. And she said to me, just have the confidence of a white mediocre man. And sort of like a white mediocre man would never doubt himself. So, you know, just go for it. And that actually really helped me. It was like, yeah, just go for it. We, you know, sort of like we almost raised to always question ourselves and, you know, am I good enough? I'm sort of like smart enough. I'm beautiful enough. I'm sort of like fashionable enough. I'm going to be liked. It doesn't matter. Just go for it. Like it generally doesn't matter. Probably maybe I'm not good enough. Maybe I'm not smart enough. Maybe I'm not beautiful enough to just get to castings or whatever. But in the same time, you just try.
This is so funny. I just had a very similar conversation yesterday with, so I was working on my cover letter for applications, and my friend Victoria, who's also working with me on the podcast, I asked her for advice because her cover letter was incredible. And she told me, Alki, just write it like a very confident man.
Yes.
And I did that. And I swear now it's like 10 times better. And
yes,
yeah, it's incredible.
And I may add a white medium. Man. So like, you know, because it just stands that, you know, it's like, how do they find all this confidence? I'm like, why? Like, you don't have. Anyway.
Okay, so since you've touched upon your Greek heritage a little, I would like to explore another area. I'm actually really impressed by the way that you managed to combine, you know, two different careers. I can imagine it takes a lot of self-discipline, organization. But I'm curious, is this way of working something that you would recommend to other people? So would you recommend that they find creative careers, I guess, and kind of combine them in a freelance way like you have? Or do you think that you've kind of been lucky in being able to work in this way?
I don't think it has to do with being lucky, and I don't think it has to do with hard work, but what it has to do is with yourself, like finding what you want, because what works for you, because a 9-to-5 job doesn't work for me. I tried it, it doesn't work. I feel that I was getting older every day. So like it just doesn't work for me. And it's not that it's a matter of like good or bad, or you should do this or you should do that. It just doesn't work. My brain doesn't work like that. I can't have pointless meetings. I can't just sort of like wait until 5 o'clock and then, I don't know, just watch Netflix and be like, oh yeah, I'm tired. And then here we go again. And then suddenly I'm 40 and I haven't done anything productive and anything that I'm proud of. But sort of like, if you want to sort of like have like a more chill life, then that's absolutely fine. And, you know, you want to climb the corporate ladder, that's amazing, because it also has a sense of security. And, you know, being in a creative industry also, you know, it's not stable. You have to work really hard, not just on sort of like your specific job, but you have to have like an all-round perspective of what's happening and what's going on. So it's what works for you. A 9-to-5 environment doesn't work for me. I've tried it because, you know, sometimes it was a friend saying, we're being sold the British dream of you get a 9-to-5, you get a mortgage, you get a car and all those things. Like, I would hate to have a mortgage and be in debt. Like I find it really stressful. Some people don't, and it's absolutely fine. So I think what you have to focus on is what works for you.
Yeah, and I guess we are, in a way, the fact that we live in this gig economy where it is possible to have two different careers, combine them, and all of this, you know, is facilitated by technology. I love that you know, make use of that and don't just accept the status quo, which is given to you, but you say, no, I'm not happy with that. I'm going to create my own way of working.
Absolutely. And I think that's a great thing about our generation, that was sort of like before people needed to have access to knowledge. Now we have so much access to knowledge that our brain needs to ask the right questions. It's all about the right questions in terms of, and the main question, since we're talking about career and we're talking about women in careers, is what do you want? And what do you want in a specific way? Because you can't have it all. For instance, I don't have the stability of a 9-to-5. But sort of like, does it work for me? Does it not work for me? How am I going to make this work? So it's all about asking questions.
So in typical Talk Tank non-linear fashion, I was hoping we could rewind the clock a little bit and give people a perspective of your early modeling days. So how did you start? How were you discovered?
I got scattered on Facebook when sort of like, you know, when the glorious
the good old days of Facebook
when Facebook was fun. I was actually at work and I thought it was spam. But then the casting director who casted me, we had mutual friends. So it was like, okay, maybe I trust them. So sort of like, I think the reason that I became a model was sort of like my fun side, which was going out and sort of like I love London's club culture. So essentially that was it. So sort of like people thought that, oh yeah, this cool girl who goes out and, you know, part of the London scene. And then it was a snowball method. And again, because I have this mentality of like, okay, let's try it. And instead of being scared, I said to myself, okay, because they asked me to do a photo shoot. So it's like, okay, just go for it, try it, see if you like it or not. If you don't like it, it's fine. You know, worst case scenario, you just have a good picture of yourself. If you like it, perfect. You have a good picture of yourself. And and then it was a snowball method. And we had the first photo shoot, then the second photo shoot was a stylist who really liked me. And he said, okay, I'm doing a photo shoot for Christian Louboutin. Do you want to come? And in the beginning, I thought it was going to be like a close-up of my legs only, not my face, because it was like, I'm not a model. Also, I'm not sort of like, I don't know, 6'3". So it was like, really, I was like, why me? Just choose someone else. I was so scared.
This is hilarious.
It was so
funny.
You thought
you were going to be like a leg model.
Yes, exactly. I thought it was going to be a leg model. It was like, I'm not that tall. Why do they want me? Because again, in my mind also, I had sort of like, because we grew up with this sort of like archetype of, in order to be a model, you have to be sort of like blonde and tall and blue eyes and, you know, sort of like this Scandinavian type. And I was like, I'm not there. I will never be there. So I don't know why they want me. But at the same time, I was like, okay, let's do it. It was a snowball method. And it's crazy because one thing led to another. Then I got signed with an agency in London. Then a year later, I got signed with an agency in Paris. And this year, I got signed with a bigger agency in London, which is one of the top ones in the world. And sort of like all the modeling started as a fun thing to do in the weekends and, you know, just to satisfy a bit of my curiosity. Now it's almost my main income and it's almost my full-time job. Now sort of like I'm doing writing as a hobby.
This is an incredible story. And
it's crazy.
Actually,
yes.
I read an article the other day that you wrote for the FT a few years ago. And I found it really astonishing. So I'll read out a little quote for it. I think it's relevant to our discussion right now. So you said, apparently my face is in fashion. While the majority of models start their career at 17 and retire at the age of 22 or 23, I am 27 and my career is just beginning. I am in demand, but I am aware that this will only last for a few seasons, not even a few years. Diversity is in fashion too, and we have to hope this is not just for a few seasons. So you wrote this article about 3 years ago. And judging from your Instagram, your modeling career is thriving.
Yes, I was wrong. FT is lying. It lasted for more than a few seasons, which I'm quite grateful. And I'm 31 now. And sort of like this week, I have two photo shoots for Vogue. So one is Vogue Portugal on Wednesday and Vogue Australia on Friday. And I'm awaiting confirmation for Vogue Arabia. And all this during like a pandemic as well, so I can't believe it. I'm really grateful as well.
But do you think that, like, first of all, congratulations, but
thank you.
do you think that there's a permanent shift, like with regards to diversity, since you describe yourself as a diverse model? Do you think that the reason that, you know, your career is still like thriving, do you think that diversity has become the norm, or do you still yes. think that it's just a trend that's gonna, you know, pass?
No, actually, I'm really happy that sort of like now I'm not considered to be a diversity model, which essentially that was the point. Because in the beginning, I was feeling a bit tokenized in the sense of like, oh, yes, it's not like a classic model. And I remember sort of like a year ago, I had a discussion with my friends. I was saying to them, I shouldn't be sort of like fall under the category of like our diversity model. And I'm glad that I'm considered to be like a normal model. And yeah, sort of like things are opening up, things are changing. And we finally realize that beauty comes in all forms, and we're realizing that beauty standards are different to anyone. It's culture. Like I was sort of like, I was doing some research and within regards to gender norms. And it was fun because we were dressing up boys with dresses up to 1940s, and we're considered pink color was for boys because it's sort of like it's showcased masculinity and strength. And in the 18th century, men were wearing red high heels, which is possibly why we have now the red sole of Christian Louboutin. So all the sort of like gender norms are like made up, and all the sort of like beauty standards are made up. And sort of like as just we're thinking about them now, we think that something is so concrete. Maybe sort of like in 10 years' time, it's going to be completely different, and it's absolutely fine. But in the same time, that's the reason we need to be more open and just not take it as sort of like as a law of nature, but more see it more as culture.
Yeah, it's amazing to see how many changes have happened, and I imagine it's also quite rewarding for you that you were a part of that in a way, you know? Like you were a yes. part of the change. When you started, it wasn't normal. And now, you know, we're actually seeing models that look like the people around us.
Yes.
But you've worked on some really cool and bold projects. So mm-hmm. you became a video game avatar for Balenciaga. You've written about voguing in Athens, which is a piece that I loved reading. Can you describe, if you can remember, your most exciting job as a writer, but also as a model so far?
Oh, God, yes. So sort of like, I think in terms of writing, the first really exciting job that I couldn't believe it was happening, it was in Financial Times. Because, again, as a migrant, in the beginning, I couldn't read Financial Times. I didn't understand it in terms of, like, the language. I was like, I don't understand what they're writing about. it's not sort of like basic English, yeah? It's sort of like it's quite high up, and the ideas are amazing, and the people who work there are incredibly so intelligent. So I think I had the first sort of like wow moment when the editor of Work and Career section, which I was working for, asked me to write an article about my modeling, which in the beginning I was hiding that I was a model. And I think somehow she found out, I think it was from my Instagram, I wouldn't thought she would stalk me. So I go to FT and she was like, oh, so you're modeling? I was like, yeah, maybe a few times. Because, you know, again, I didn't want modeling to define my career in a sense of, maybe sort of like it's my own perception, which was wrong, of like, oh yeah, sort of like the model that, you know, sort of like she doesn't have substance or she's not intelligent, or I didn't want to go to that route and that branding.
Yeah.
So I wasn't advertising it at all. And she was saying, okay, you write an article about how's modeling now within regards to the gig economy and diversity. And I was shocked when she asked me to do that. I wrote it. So like she has amazing editing skills. And at the time, she almost became my mentor. And it became viral. It became viral on FT as well, which I couldn't believe. So in terms of writing, this was my wow moment. And in terms of modeling, I think my break moment was Christian Louboutin, but my favorite is Balenciaga, because it was my dream to model for Balenciaga. Also, Demna, who's the creative director of Balenciaga, he's a refugee. And he was saying that actually he owns his life to UN, who were feeding at the time children. And now he's well, he's a genius, creative genius, and also he's in charge of the top luxury brand at the moment. And he's defining the trends, and he's defining a big industry when it comes to money as well. And yeah, so like we're in Paris, it was beginning, yeah, early November 2020. And I remember all those amazing gold boots, which are reminiscing of a night. And they hadn't told us what was going on, in a sense of like, they told us, okay, you go. Sort of like roughly the concept is sort of like a video game, in a sense of like, oh, you're like roughly an avatar. And I was asking the people, because when you're modeling, no one tells you the concept beforehand. So you actually go on set and you're like, okay, what's the story? What are we doing? So you have to pick up the references like immediately. So sort of like as I was going along, because they didn't tell us, I guess, for secrecy, I've asked someone from who was actually working for Balenciaga, was like, what's happening? What are we doing? And they said, they're going to turn all the models into avatars and it's going to be a video game, but don't say anything. I was like, oh my God, you're joking. That's incredible. And yes, yeah, so like the production was as big as a movie. So yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I understand why this one would be your favorite. I really love it when, you know, different sectors of technology like intersect, and like music and fashion and video games.
Exactly. Oh,
it's just like a firework of talent and like inspiration.
Creativity.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's the word I was looking for. Kind of reflecting on fashion and the perception, like it sounds like to me, and I think to most people, you know, fashion, but also the creative industry in general, is this amazing, like extravagant, fun world. And, you know, more traditional lines of work are, you know, more boring, I guess I would say. Mm-hmm. As someone who has kind of experienced both, I mean, you've already kind of hinted at it, but I guess,
yeah.
Do you think that there are still like aspects of fashion and the creative industry in general that we romanticize, and that, you know, we demonize in a way people in more traditional lines of work? I guess what I'm asking is, yeah. is working in art and in fashion as amazing as the hype around it?
Well, it is. It absolutely is. But sort of like, I think people romanticize the idea of that being creative, it's just sort of like sitting down and suddenly you have a vision or an inspiration. It's not that. It's not that at all. It's really hard. It requires more self-discipline than a traditional job. And, you know, not only that, but you have sort of like everyone against you. In a sense, yeah, sort of like, it's not easy. People think that it's easy. For instance, with modeling, you need to being able to handle rejection on an everyday basis. And I'm not being a hyperbole here. It's every day. And so like the beginning is really hard. Now it's just part of the game. So I'm just, you know, going. You have to be self-disciplined in a sense of like the small thing, which is actually a routine for a model. For instance, I mentioned that this week I'm shooting Vogue. Yeah. So essentially we're in February. At the moment, I don't know, we're like roughly, is it 9 degrees? We're going to shoot summer collections. So I'm going to wear summer clothes.
Oh,
and
no.
This is like vice. Yeah. And but this is the norm though. And vice versa, during summer, we are shooting winter clothes. So sort of like I had a photo shoot in Athens where it was 40 degrees and I was wearing a huge puffer jacket. So it was, yeah, it was my first sunstroke in my life. yeah, it was hardcore. So yeah, it's not easy physically and mentally. It's not for the faint-hearted. On the other hand, it's amazing. It's beautiful. You meet incredible minds. You meet people with incredible ideas. You're going to amazing places. You're going to amazing parties. You're wearing amazing clothes, which are pure art. But yeah, I feel that it's almost like a balance. Like you get really sort of like negative things, which require lots of which require thick skin, but on the other hand you're getting amazing things.
It's a balance. I feel like people underestimate the downside. Mm-hmm. Like the upside is obviously amazing and is what you see. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, and it's the glamour.
But the downside, like people who haven't like worked in the industry don't really think about that, like the rejection that you mentioned.
No.
So in a few sections in our interview today, you talked a bit about nightlife and like partying. From afar, your life seems effortless in a way. You studied in London, you created this multi-dimensional career, you spent weekends dancing at raves. So I have now more of a not industry-related question, just like a people mm-hmm. question, I guess. So for new students who just come to London now and are struggling to fit in, or they're struggling to create a new life abroad, what advice do you have? Did you immediately like fit in and feel at home when you came to London, or?
No, absolutely not. And London is such a hard city, and I cannot imagine how it's sort of like starting now. I have so many friends who sort of like working in the creative industries, and they were in London for like so many years and then left because London at the moment is unbearable. But in the same time, and I'll be saying like, as an advice always to people, like find your London. Maybe it's like harder now, but you know, maybe you'll be able to find communities when things are opening up. Sort of like it took me 4 years to find my London, essentially, in terms of like the right people, the right places, where you socialize in real life, but also where you socialize online, and sort of like the magazines and jobs and the right people and et cetera, et cetera. But sort of like, you know, going back to, you're saying that, you know, oh yeah, it seems effortless. It seems effortless because I worked so hard. So then it comes natural. So sort of like another advice is do your research, go everywhere. So then you can pick and choose. Try and do as much as you can. Use all your resources. Like you're in LSE, which is an amazing university. Talk to people. I remember sort of like the time when we were able to actually go to the university, I was reading all the free newspapers that I could. I was trying to sort of like trying to register to as many societies as possible. I was trying to like to just sort of like absorb everything. And then sort of like your choices will be sort of like will seem effortless because sort of like you have formed your microcosm in a way.
I really like the analogy of find your London, and I think it's also comforting for people to hear that, you know, for you it took 4 years to find your London. It's yes. not gonna happen like the moment you step into a new city. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Moving into the last section of our podcast now, Real Talk, where we ask the questions that we all want to know the answer to but are often too shy to ask. So starting with, if you could change one thing about society, what would it be?
I think at the moment we just need to be more kind to ourselves. I think we're sort of like everyone's really tired, everyone is really stressed. And it's fun because I've started noticing that people are getting more angry instead of being more positive and calm and nice to each other. So I think, yeah, just be sort of like nice to each other and understand where someone comes from in terms of like background, in terms of like even if someone is racist, ask why, like every time, because I get loads of hating on social media as well. I sort of like my number one approach is like, okay, why? Why are you saying this? How am I doing this? And it's fun because, you know, the more you ask, the more they don't know what to say. And they're like, okay, so why? Okay, good. So why are you saying this? And it always comes down to, oh, I don't know, I'm just angry. Or I don't know, I'm jealous. So sort of like, yeah, it's better to not push back. Sort of like I'm a firm believer of kill them with kindness, and you can kill everyone with kindness. And in the same time, just sort of like maybe you learn something, maybe you're wrong, maybe you're right. Just be open, not aggressive, kind to each other, and understand where everyone comes from.
Do you know what? You really have a journalistic mindset through and through. Like, you know, even like trying to understand, like, why did you say that? Like, what is behind that?
Yeah. The best thing is like act like if you're stupid. So sort of like if someone, what was it? Oh yeah, I think it was something that I posted on social media, and then someone came back. Obviously, I get much more hate from men rather than women. Something, he called me a liar.
What?
I was like, why? Yeah. I was like, how? Why am I a liar? And he was like, oh, because you do this and you're fine. But when I do it, I'm not able to do it. So I was like, okay, so maybe it's not me then. And I was like, okay, so maybe you should try and, you know, this routine, and then maybe it will work. And he came back saying, I can't, I'm depressed. I was like, don't worry. Okay, I'm so sorry to hear that. Maybe sort of like do sort of like this routine, maybe try to do sort of like this thing for like 5 minutes per day. And then eventually you get better. And then sort of like, you just, it reached to a point where sort of like he apologized and he said, thank you so much for being kind to me, although I didn't deserve it. And it was my sort of like my response was like, this is a lesson for you. Have a lovely day.
Wow, this is incredible. So you really managed to kind of turn him around.
This is the only way. This is the only way. The only way is just approach someone with kindness, because if you want to hurt someone, that means that you already hurt. You don't, like, people don't have the need to hurt someone if they're fine. Also, yeah, if someone's sort of like, you know, is not doing as well as you do, they have sort of like they need to downgrade you. But if you sort of like understand that it's not, don't take it personally, just ask questions and be kind, and yeah, the results will surprise you.
I think this story really teaches us a lot about how we should approach people that don't necessarily agree with us, and to take a more transformational viewpoint. So thank you for, you know, I think you've shared so many wise insights here today that are going to help
people. Glad.
But to wrap up, we've got one more question left in the talk tank. If you could invite anyone in the world that you want for a podcast interview, who would you invite and why?
Actually, I want three.
sure, yes, why because, not?
Yeah, because, you know, I have sort of like this, sort of like my triptych is sort of like politics, which are satisfied through media, fashion, so which I satisfy through modeling, and music, which I used to satisfy through night culture, but now I've satisfied them through radio. So sort of like, I think I want one persona from each sector. So I would love to have Lagarde, which saw her in LSE actually, and she's so intelligent, and I love her way her brain works. So I would love to talk to her, and I would love to, well, since this is, I would love to talk to Coco Chanel, because she was one of the first entrepreneurs, female entrepreneurs as well, in a male sort of like dominated industry, which was fashion. And I would love to talk to Honey Dijon, which is a TJ, a transgender TJ, and she plays amazing music. And yeah, just have them all have a nice discussion
panel
all together.
Discussion.
Yeah, and talk about politics, fashion, and music, and see what happens.
That would make for such an interesting conversation, I'm sure. And I think you really inspired me. Now we should also expand our podcast guest to music as well. I'm excited to see what comes next.
Oh, you're so kind. Thank
you. I'm excited to be surprised, because I feel like with you, we're always going to be
thank
surprised.
You so much.
Unfortunately, we reached the end of the interview, but I would like to thank you, first of all, just for the work that you do, because it's had a very positive effect on my life. You've inspired me, you've motivated me, and I think many others. It's been a pleasure, and yeah, we're excited to see what's next for you.
Oh my God, thank you so, so much. Honestly, you made not my day, my year.
Thanks for tuning in. See you next week, and leave a message after the beep. Nasia,